Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
But this thing we do doesn't require perfection. We're explorers. We live for the unknown. You can't prepare for that. Nobody on the Cerritos is even close to perfect. We're a mishmash of people and various creatures that don't fit in anywhere else. But we're a family. That's why I love it here. We believe in the mission and in each other. My mom might be gone, but she handpicked this crew. Which is why I know we're gonna be okay. This isn't the end of a story, it's the beginning. We're gonna make her proud.
Wow, that's such a healthy way of looking at it.
Yeah. I did get mad and set my bed on fire.
Wait, what? Is it still burning?
Yeah, and I kicked a computer. But you know, that's all out of my system. I'm good, I think. I mean, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Tune in. Uh-oh.
Okay, I believe we have everything. All our ducks in a row, So we can begin.
To do what?
To do the podcast.
What podcast?
Okay. I don't know if you're just getting us through this thing quickly, or...
I'm just helping out.
All right. Sort of a new style of help.
What's the podcast? Which one are we doing?
I forget. Patrick has this kind of info. I don't keep the sheet. Patrick keeps the sheets. I don't have that sheet.
So Dan is like...
Are we doing true crime?
Dan's totally like just pretending. Jesse, I'm not 100% sure.
I don't know what's going on with that.
Which podcast are we doing?
I don't know.
Which one is it this week?
All right.
Is it the pickles?
Oh, man. I wish it were.
Is it Elf?
I mean, I've been in a pickle mood lately. Maybe we should do It's Got Pickles Part 2.
Pickles Revisited.
How much more do we have to really say about pickles?
Well, we could eat more pickles.
Yeah, but we could.
So it's for us, not for anyone else.
But we could also just eat all the same pickles again and see if our ratings hold true. Yes. It would be scientific
just
to
revisit
do that.
It.
Yeah, a proper replication of our prior.
I want to do a blind taste test between the different kinds of whipped topping, like Cool Whip, and then the different grocery stores and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, we'll put it on the docket.
You should do a taste test between Coke and Mexican Coke.
Yeah.
All right. I think I can tell the difference.
And Danish Coke.
We would have to prove that empirically. No, what you all have stumbled upon or have chosen, you've elected.
Tricked into.
You may have elected duped. To listen to this podcast.
You by mistake hit the download button and play, and there's just nothing to be done at this point.
Bamboozled.
You could have one of those odd services that has a
Shanghai.
Play a random podcast. I don't think so. I don't know how many people.
I don't think that works like that.
Have access to such a service.
Well, some players will do it. It's just there not many people would have that feature enabled.
Yeah.
Maybe on YouTube they randomly got us.
There's
like YouTube
millions
like,
of podcasts.
Like, check this podcast out.
A lot of them are not particularly good.
Yeah, the YouTube one's more likely.
This is a good one, though. This is a pretty good podcast.
If I do say so myself.
Yeah, and sometimes we do. We keep forgetting about the review haikus.
You usually do.
Oh, shoot. Is there a new review for a haiku?
I don't think there's a new one. I mean, if there is, I apologize, but I don't think so. I think we just haven't had a new review in a while, so we haven't done a haiku. And we haven't told people, and we can do that right now, if you leave us a review, and we'll tell you what the podcast is in just a moment. If you leave a review for the podcast that you're listening to now, Dan will write a custom haiku.
A bespoke haiku.
A bespoke haiku, not generated by any sort of AI assistance.
I would hope the assumption would be that I wouldn't do such a thing.
I just stated because there is so much of this AI stuff going around.
That's true.
We play with the AI stuff sometimes, but for fun and overtly. We make a big deal about it. We don't try to sneak it in there. Dan's not going to sneak it in.
We make a big whoop.
Either, yeah. So here's the information. Some with the information we've withheld, and that is the title of the podcast that you're listening to. We've also withheld the information until now that Jesse has been gifted a stylus. What's it called? It's a beat. Stylophone beat.
You got one too.
Mm-hmm. I did as well. A stylophone beat from Dan. Dan mm-hmm. has gifted Jesse
it's a,
and I.
It's a stylophone drum machine.
Stylophone beats.
Yeah.
With if anybody's a looping drum machine. Familiar with a stylophone.
And as per tradition, when Jesse gets a new little musical toy, he enjoys fiddling around with it on the podcast. So that's something you all have to
it's a, this is a
look forward
special
to.
Holiday edition.
And it's a good challenge for Dan and I to try to navigate that.
I like that you can go
it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was something we just figured out.
Yeah. Okay. And all of this fun stuff is being brought to you by the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Engage the core.
All right. I wonder what Dan was waiting to play there. He had his hand, his finger just hovering over his sound clip button there for a little bit. Yes, this is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. It is episode 269 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
This thing we do doesn't require perfection.
We prove that week in, week out. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dan.
Yes.
And we Thanks will this week, bittersweetly, Aww. Somewhat ruefully,
no,
discuss the
perhaps a bit angrily
the series finale of Star Trek Lower Decks. And that series finale is titled The New Next Generation.
I agree.
All right, good. I'm glad. We're
glad
all
somebody agrees.
We're all on the same page there. And of course, this The New Next Generation is a part two of a two-parter. Mm-hmm. It started last week with Fissure Quest, mm-hmm. which of course we discussed in conjunction with Upper Deckers in last week's podcast episode. You all should check it out. But
you probably already did.
But, well, hopefully they did. But if not, go check it out. And regardless, we do have a voicemail from Grayson.
Ozani, when the light came over the mountain.
His voicemail is about Fissure Quest, but we got it in after we had already recorded, so we're going to play it now. But
too late.
No, it turns out in the perfect time because, Dan, as you commented last week,
true.
We didn't realize, of course, ahead of time, although I suppose we could have guessed, we didn't realize that Fissure Quest was going to be part one of a two-parter, and Dan was suggesting we should have just waited to cover that one.
Yes, I did.
So we do figure some of that
out. He's the idea, man.
We're going to reference that plot, of course, in tonight's discussion, so I think it's perfectly appropriate to enjoy Grayson's voicemail about Fissure Quest. Here we go.
Good.
What a great show. And I'm not talking about It's Got Star Trek or even Fissure Quest. I'm talking about the Emmy-nominated episode of WKRP in Cincinnati titled Venus and the Man, in which DJ Venus Flytrap basically tells this kid that the whole school system is rigged to keep him dumb because it's easier to mess with people who don't know stuff. He flips it like, dude, if you stay in school, you'll be way smarter than the system and your teachers, and they won't even see it coming. Total mind game because it works. And Arnold's like, oh, yeah, I want to beat the system. So, yeah, that was a great show.
Reverse psychology.
But I also do want to tell you guys how excited I am to hear your reaction to the latest episode of Lower Decks Fissure Quest. I freaking loved it. How cool was it to see the Animax Cinnamon, whatever the name of that ship is. It looked so good. I mean, it was almost like it wasn't animated in some scenes. The beauty shots of that ship were amazing. I did not realize how much I liked the Defiance class until this episode. It was like one of those episodes I wish I could have watched with Star Trek friends so we could have all reacted when we saw the Animaximanaman, whatever it was called. When it appeared, I would have loved to have been in a room with Star Trek nerds. Maybe you guys could help me out with that. Could we recreate our reactions right here, right now, like at the same time? Yeah. Like if we all just flash back to that moment and we count to three and then we do all of our reactions together, it'll feel like we were all there at the same time.
To see the
okay,
ship in the
one,
in the
two,
Fissure Quest.
Three. Oh my God, it's so cool!
Oh,
I can't believe it.
What?
Okay, now I feel like I've watched it with
holograms.
Friends. Thank you, guys. I can't wait to hear what clips Stan's decided to pull. I mean, there's at least two or three holograms and so many T'Pol moments. So, okay, if that's all, I have nothing to plug. I'll see you guys all on the Blue Ski at TV Guy Grayson later.
Thanks.
Blueski. It's right. Blueski.
Blueski for real.
Blueski.
Yeah, and then...
WKRP in Cincinnati.
We kick ass.
I used to watch that show, WKRP in Cincinnati. It was hilarious. And I remember the episode he was talking about. And of course, there's the famous turkey episode where they describe the throwing the live turkeys at the helicopter. Anyway, WKRP.
I think I remember that.
The problem with WKRP, of course, is it's hard to watch the reruns because, first of all, they didn't have reruns for a while because the music licenses didn't allow them to play. Because in the show, it had original music from like the Rolling Stones and stuff. And they had to redo all the music with sound-alike stuff. And it sounds like really weird.
It costs a lot to use a Rolling Stone.
Yeah. And Daria had the same issue. When Daria, it's hard to find it with the real music. But anyway, thanks as always, Grayson, for the email. I hope by now you've gotten to enjoy all of Dan's fun sound clips from Fisher Quest. It was a good time. We did very much enjoy that episode. It was a great lead-in to this episode.
Yep.
It was part one.
So none of us are going to say anything.
No, we're going to talk about this. I thought you were about to push a button or something.
Oh, no, that was appreciate you with the heads up, but I failed you, I guess.
No, because you had been playing sound effects after each previous sort of state. It was like like musical measures. You'd be like three measures and then a sound clip.
Right. Yeah, that's a good rhythm to have when you're doing it.
Ha ha, still got it.
That you do, Dan.
Got it!
And actually, you know, Grayson, you mentioned...
Do you know who this is?
What? Got it!
Is that the Australian engineer?
I forget her name.
Meredith.
Meredith.
Who I was also mentioning plays Poppy on Mythic Quest.
Oh, I thought you were about to say who I'm in love with.
I'm in love with
Meredith. She's great.
She's just wonderful, and I can't stop thinking about her.
No, what I was going to say is Grayson had mentioned how he wished he had been watching that episode with other Star Trek fans, and it's something that a lot of us don't get to do. Even the three of us are usually watching these episodes on our lonesome. However, last week, Dan and I did watch a couple of the episodes together. It was not the first time we'd seen them, so it wasn't like we were discovering them, but it was fun sitting next to Dan on the couch, holding hands, and watching Star Trek like the old days.
Day is weird.
I showed up at the tail end of that, and it was, you guys were all snuggled.
Yeah, we're just like,
there was some pizza.
Cozy.
That was weird.
On the couch. No, I thought it was delightful. It wasn't weird.
It was touching.
So anyway, thanks again, Grayson. We appreciate it. And before we start our discussion, just a heads up that, this is the series finale. So no new Star Trek for a little bit, at least until the Section 31 movie in January. So we'll cover that.
Are we looking forward to that? I don't know much about it. I haven't even seen the trailers.
The first trailer looks stupid. The second trailer that came out, I think, last week was, I think, a little better, but... I don't know. It's got great actors.
I saw the opening to the trailer and I just kind of skipped past it because I often skip trailers. But.
Yeah, it's...
When is Strange New Worlds come out?
I don't know. I don't think there's an official date yet, but probably springtime, I guess.
This is madness!
Well, regardless, next week, actually the next couple weeks, we've decided we're going to cover Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. We'll break into two parts. Part one will come out next week and then part two the week after. So that's what you have to look forward to next. And then we'll pull out Dan's algorithm to have it pick some random Star Trek episodes until we have some other new stuff to cover, like Section 31. Strange New Worlds, etc.
It'll have to do.
The Starfleet Academy will come out eventually, you know. So there's plenty more Star Trek to come, although it is disappointing.
Yeah, this
as we get into our last conversation about Lower Decks.
This was some of the best.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was really great. It's a spoiler alert. It was, in my view, a really well done, well executed, excellent series finale.
And now we can just watch it over and over again.
Yeah,
what there is of it.
And I was thinking exactly
there's
that.
Still a bunch of it.
And of all the newer Star Treks, Lower Decks is probably the highest on the list for rewatchability in my view.
Totally. Yeah.
For a variety of reasons, some of it being particularly episodic and easier to digest.
It's crisp.
Probably being the chief reasons, but I look forward
Chief O'Brien
getting to watch these 50 episodes over and over.
The way they ended it, they ended it in a way that wrapped everything up pretty nicely, and it felt like a solid ending. But at the same time, they like they did the whole like I want to know about this new story that's happening.
This was not Star Trek VI with the signatures at the end.
Right?
Somebody mentioned on Reddit, they said, "Oh, I thought they might do that." But the thing is you do the signatures at the end when you are actually retiring. Everyone's done. There's like no more. And even though yes, they Spock and Kirk had a couple of things after that. That's not what they're going for here. They're going for closing a chapter.
And now, even though the show has been canceled and there's been no plans to renew it, it seems like they're still kind of trying to leave it open to be like, encourage other people to be like, look, we'll keep doing this if you let us.
You expect these characters to show up again. The question is when and how soon and in what form.
What if they just made it all live action? That'd be weird.
Yeah, they could do some live action. Like,
I wouldn't be surprised if we see some of that.
Different reality.
Live action is certainly a possibility. Crossovers with other shows, perhaps. And honestly, who knows? You know, we can talk more about it later. But Starbase 80 as the new Deep Space Nine, I predicted.
Starbase 80,
similar. I said before in a few episodes back that I thought that Freeman, well, it was the Starbase 80 episode where I thought it made sense for Freeman to come work on Starbase 80.
Yeah, but I liked the reasoning they had for why it, like, they have it is because like it's old. So it's kind of like when the new Battlestar Galactica, they had that old the old ship that like
the Galactica.
That old ship in Battlestar Galactica.
It didn't have
networking ability because of the whole Cylon situation. But like I thought that was a cool tie-in, and like the fact, and I was also like, aw, because like you know, Starbase 80 is like a piece of shit, but then it turns out to be the one that they need. Like that's the only one that can do the job, and so it like,
which is a
you feel good. It makes you feel good for Starbase,
which is similar
80.
To Deep Space Nine.
But it's okay.
People forget
they have Garak and T'Pol,
just like Deep Space Nine. Well, not T'Pol, but
right.
Yeah. Well,
you don't get it.
That's the end bits.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
We can talk a little bit more about at the end of the episode of where we think things might go from here.
This is a non-linear podcast.
Yeah, but why don't we start at the
damn? That is so dishonorable.
The beginning
buckle
here.
Up.
And even at the pre-beginning where they had this great, I love when they do the previously on Lower Decks and it's all serious. It's Ransom this week doing it. And they really show you a lot from the whole season, right?
Yeah.
To get you oriented to what's going to happen.
So quick run through. They showed the quantum Mariner's quantum fissure situation. They showed Boimler jealous of quantum fissure Boimler. They showed Rutherford having implant problems. They showed Freeman filling senior science position with Tendi and Talin competing.
Buddies.
They had Mariner helping the Klingons kill Barg or whatever. Then they had Mariner discover the rifts are intelligent design. Boimler thinks that something Boimler thinking about William. I don't know what I meant there. Harry being crazy.
Does that go back to your question, right? Dan, last week you were talking about if you went into a different dimension and you would have sex with yourself or something. What was it?
Yeah.
You thought they would make it illegal, and we kept saying, who's they? And you said, you're like they, the Puritan overlords of the universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Illegal to have sex with yourself.
Yeah.
Is that where you were talking about just now when you said you have a note about William thinking about Boimler? Boimler thinking about William?
All it says is Boimler thinking about William. I don't know what that means. So there's another one I skipped earlier that says brother says it's awesome bro, and I don't know what the fuck I meant by that. So somewhere in there's something about brother
was
says
that the
it's
Klingon
awesome
brother
bro.
Was that
oh yeah,
maybe
what's his name's brother,
Malar is his name,
but I don't know brother? What I don't know when he said it's awesome. I don't know what I meant there.
Was he talking about the snacks?
He's there with the snacks.
Well, while Dan tries to interpret his notes,
they have salty and sweets.
Well, anyway, that's basically. Oh, and then the last bit was Harry going nuts, and then the directed Sauton burst. Directed Sauton burst, and William sending it into the Otro universe.
Wait, what are these notes in reference to?
That's the opening scene when they went through. All
oh
the
yeah,
previously.
yeah. Thank you.
All our snacks are made of bugs.
Oh, and by the way, if you look at the blurb, the show description of the episode. Lower Decks, sometimes the show's descriptions would be a little bit whimsical, but for the most part, they were fairly descriptive, the typical thing you like you used to see in TV Guide. The blurb for this one was, season finale where lots of wild stuff happens.
It was full impulse!
That's almost like a Rick and Morty style show note.
Or it's all like, bruh.
Which is
today
fine.
Is not a good day to die!
But Okay, so now we get into the episode proper, and what do they do here in the very last episode, episode 50 of this series, the Klingons. Series finale, not just the Klingons, they, in order to have a story for their series finale, they have the balls, slash ovaries, I should say, they have the gonads to introduce a whole new villain that they will have to develop in a half-hour show. And do it in a way that's convincing to make the challenge to the crew seem justified, right?
Hands brace for impact. All hands brace for weird.
Readings are getting freaky.
They are able to introduce a new character, kill the new character all in one short episode, and it totally works, right?
Yeah, it
wouldn't necessarily work. Normally, you'd want to rely on, like, you know, Gul Dukat or whatever, you know, some villain that you've been building up over a long time.
Because it's continuing, like, the you could consider, like, those siblings, like, a singular character, because, like, each one is a continuation of the last one, and it acts within one story, sort of, like, continuing that plot line.
That's how it works with the Klingons. It sort of makes
like
sense.
Like Duras's.
And each new character, there was Barg, and then there was Relga. I forget the first guy's name.
Garg-Minarg-Narg.
But
Garg-Minarg-Narg.
Basically, when one picks up, they pick up where the other one left off, essentially. Yes. And so you can kind of, you already have a backstory to each one of them kind of implied
point.
From that.
Absolutely,
But yeah, it is true that it is pretty, like, nutsoid that they like introduce a character
it's
like
totally
the last
nutsoid
episode.
Bro
totally nutsoid
so I was impressed by that, because when they had this person clearly being
Dorg,
that's right,
Dorg was the first one,
Dorg Minorgnorg, and Relga the sister.
What really?
When they it is a challenge sometimes dealing with Jesse's. That was just, wasn't even a tune. It was just sort of a straight tone for just a little bit.
Don't be so weak.
Hey, don't you think this is like if you say this over and over again, doesn't this sound like a really weird sentence?
Don't be so weak.
Don't be so weak.
Don't be so weak. Don't be so weak. Don't be so weak.
If you didn't speak English, wouldn't that just sound like a bunch of gobbledygook?
If you play it a few more times, it'll sound gobbledygook to me, and I do speak English.
Don't be so weak. 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 Don't be so weak.
Don't be so weak. That sounds like clown words, you know?
Yeah.
They sound like clown words.
To support,
don't be so weak.
To support your argument, Dan, could you give us some examples of other clown words?
I mean, it's just like, because it's like, weak, wak, woke, whoa. Boop, bop, beep, boo. Barty, don't do. Don't be so weak. Like, plot, plot, blot, plot, blot, weak, beak, boke, boke, beep, boke, beak, plot, 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 plot.
Missing out on Dan's miming.
Dan's losing his shit.
That was weird.
That was weird.
I will ram their bridge.
So yes, new villain, pulled off very well, very impressive, unsurprising in retrospect, of course. But you know, there's a couple aspects of this episode where you get a little nervous at first. First was is like, oh, are they going to pull off this introducing a new villain thing? They did. The other thing was having Rutherford.
I'd like to see you try.
Get mad at the Cerritos. It was really upsetting.
Yeah.
That story closed down very well.
It was weird because at first I thought, briefly I thought that Williams sent the Soliton wave to the wrong dimension and that this was a different dimension.
Oh,
because Rutherford was hating on the Cerritos so much.
Okay.
And,
weird.
Yeah, and
I can see how that would be a bit
now,
of a red herring.
At the beginning of the last episode, we saw those Rutherford was having problems with his headset, we saw.
Yes.
But he wasn't hating on the Cerritos. So I was wondering how much time passed between that moment and then the beginning of the second episode. Who knows? But at first I was also confused because for some reason I thought in my head it was supposed to mirror that what happened at the beginning of the last episode. But then I was like, no, it's a different time. But what really got me confused was, like I just said, which was how Rutherford...
Oh, okay, so we already know.
Because Rutherford's like... because he was like so down on the Cerritos, I thought that was weird. And it just, the opening, I thought the opening of this was supposed to mirror that of the other one. I thought they were supposed to be the same time. I thought the beginning of this episode was supposed to be the beginning of the last episode, the same time.
But, it was the end of the last episode.
Yeah, it was the end of the last episode.
I know. That was a stupid assumption on my part.
We got to start a little earlier than what we saw at the end of the last episode.
But like Rutherford, so he turns out in the end, like, it wasn't the Cerritos that he didn't like. It was his implants that he didn't like, right? And so I didn't know.
It seemed like he mostly just didn't like when the Cerritos was changing up. Like he started hating it. He hated it even more. So it was more like.
So, well, okay. So here's a conversation between Rutherford and Billups. Rutherford goes, dang it, stupid new quantum reality power relays. And then Billups goes, implant trouble? And Rutherford goes, no, it's working great. He just said his implant's working great. He just said his implant's working great. And then he says, but these systems are a mess. Who designs a ship like this? So at what
point? That was when it was changing.
So at what point did he decide he was wrong about him initially thinking it was the ship's problem? Because initially he said his implant was fine, but by the end he decided that his implant was not fine. I'm wondering at what point he changed his mind.
There are some inconsistencies because there are times in this season and even in this episode where
dang it, stupid new quantum reality power relays,
where the implant is not working properly because there's like sparks coming out of it and shit, right? Yeah. So there's some stuff there. I do believe there's some inconsistencies in how they've set up his frustration because, as you noted, was it you, Jesse, that noted it was that when the ship was changing was when he was actually getting upset. And so it sort of doesn't quite square that he's like mad at the Cerritos, because at first he's mad because it's too old, because it's like a freedom class, and then he's mad that it's too new.
And even though the beginning of this episode happened later than the beginning of the last episode, we can still assume they're close.
The beginning of this episode happened earlier than the end of the last episode.
Don't say that. Yes, because that's exactly what happened. Okay. Well, just seconds before the last episode,
like 30 seconds or a minute. We see the conversation leading up to Boimler reading the pad.
My point is, the beginning of the last episode began not too long before the beginning of the second episode.
Totally, dude.
So you would think that Rutherford would be in a similar state of mind then as he was in the beginning of the last episode.
No, I'm agreeing.
And in the last episode, he mentioned nothing about it. He wasn't bitching about the Cerritos at all in the last episode. Now, granted, there wasn't much time, but that was a common theme throughout this whole episode. He was nonstop bitching about the Cerritos, and nothing hinted at that last episode, basically.
Well, look, they have been hinting at
the Cali class rules,
weird stuff with his implant even earlier in the season. What I think happened here
is
the class is a classic case of they made a decision to arrive at a certain conclusion, and that conclusion was the very triumphant and frankly emotional scene where Rutherford falls back in love with the Cerritos, suddenly realizes, no, the Cerritos is exactly the right ship to solve this problem.
God, I love you.
And he goes on his engineering madness spree where the Lower Decks theme kicks in. And
I love you too.
Everything's sounding so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That was worth it. And to get to that, you needed, dramatically, you needed to have him start the episode in a bad place and then come back to it, because him coming back to it is what is that emotional kick in the ass that the episode is right where the episode needs that emotional kick in the ass.
Ozani, when the light came over the mountain.
Yeah. But I agree that the setup is maybe a little forced to get it there, but to me it works because it worked out in the end.
We've never seen Rutherford like Even just that angry about anything.
Other than those episodes where we saw pre-Rutherford.
Right.
Counting dickhead Rutherford. The Rutherford that we got to know.
Yeah.
You know. I like it. He just ripped the implant like out of his head.
Yeah.
You always think that those things are like drilled into your brain or something like that. But I guess not.
I mean, I still do think that. I think it probably was a problem that he did probably, that. But.
And I don't understand when he said, I'll enjoy the Cerritos twice as much now that I don't have my implant. The two aren't related, or you're going to enjoy the Cerritos more with the implant because you can see more. But I don't see how you'd enjoy it more without it.
I took that to mean that he's going to have more fun engineering because he will have fewer advantages. And so that an engineer wants to have the challenge.
It's more of a puzzle.
So there will be more of a puzzle.
Rutherford was like, as we know, he was all complaining about how like shit kept going wrong with the Cerritos. It's old. He can't do shit with it. But then Tendi was like, when Rutherford said he was pissed at the Cerritos, Tendi was like, but there's so much stuff left to fix.
Yeah, I know, right?
Which is like the same reason why he was pissed at it. He was pissed because there's like, everything's broken, but she spun it as, but you get to fix
so much
shit.
Well, that's normally what he was into.
Yeah, exactly.
Normally he was like excited about it. Because that's when they got to go to the, briefly they were thinking of trying to get transferred to the nicer ship.
Mm-hmm.
Season 3 or something like that?
Yeah.
And then they were like, man, this kind of is boring.
And they had the new tricorders.
Everything's working.
Let's
try that again, Dan.
Take two.
Okay.
Still got it.
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
How this new bit of lore that the Cali class is the most configurable of starships.
Configurable. I think that that's an extension of existing lore in that because it's a utility ship, I think early on, like season one, they talked about how the implication certainly was is that, you know, it can be outfitted for all sorts of situations, whatever needs to be because of their second contact mission. They can go to an ocean planet. They can go to a desert planet. Mm-hmm. They can go to a super magnetic crazy land planet.
Remember, Rutherford, though, routed the Rift's energy directly into the dilithium chamber, which meant they were being fueled by interdimensionality itself.
Yeah. That's wild.
That was a fucked up. I barely got through those sentences. Yeah. I think you can.
There was a lot of hilarious.
I like.
Do you think if you tried that reading it again, you could do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, he was. See, we got to remember that Rutherford routed the Rift's energy directly into the dilithium chamber. At that point, it was being fueled by interdimensionality. At that point, they were being fueled by interdimensionality itself.
Why are you saying interdimensionality?
Well, that's how it's spelled.
That's not how it was spelled.
How
do you say mayonnaise?
Okay.
Mayonnaise.
I mean, I'm not going to push back too hard.
How do you say
Blueski? Blueski's fine. Mayonnaise.
Grayson knew how to say Blueski.
Yeah. No, I'm into Blueski. Mm-hmm. All right. Look at that. It's about time we take a break.
You've sided with the Ptox who destroyed my ship.
And... We'll take a brief break, and when we get back, we will continue this conversation.
No,
talking a little bit more about Relga and her whole deal, and move along from there. So, with that, we will be right back.
We don't have time for this. We're supposed to be closing a rift.
All right, we are back.
This isn't the end of a story; it's the beginning.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Oh, thanks.
Wouldn't that have been better to play like earlier in the episode?
Well, I already had this one.
This thing we do doesn't require perfection.
And we also had this.
Engage the core. Yeah.
So it's a question of which one to begin with.
Engage the core was probably the best one to
begin
with.
Yeah. And then, which is why I followed it up with.
This thing we do doesn't require perfection.
Because I already began it with one thing. And so that was a better follow up than.
This isn't the end of a story. It's the beginning.
But I was considering playing that first for a while, but then I decided to go with Engage the Core. And I didn't think it worked second in the first time. I think it worked first in the second time.
I've become confused, but I believe you.
Okay. There was a lot of ship button noises. There was this. There was this. There was this. And then there was this.
Oh, you might want to upload those to TrekCore to their sound bank. They'd appreciate high quality sound effects.
You might want to upload these nuts.
Then there was this.
Was that in Dolby?
Do you know what that was? It was a bird of play.
Bird of play.
I know. I'm glad.
But that bird gets a lot of play.
I'm not trying to embarrass you. I know it's just a trick of the tongue, but it was good because I was fighting hard not to respond to your question with disdain.
Yeah.
I really wanted to say, because you were like, you know what that was. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to say disdain.
I know you would.
But because I'm a professional, I didn't. I didn't say disdain.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
It would have been rude to say disdain.
Yeah. All right. You're right. I'm glad you didn't say it.
All right. Do you guys want to see if you can remember /guess/know the various classes of ship that the Cerritos turned into at various points in the episode?
There was the Freedom class.
Boom! Freedom class.
With the one nacelle.
1 point to Jesse. This is not a typical fun 'em up, but
it turned into another one with one nacelle, right? After that.
Yeah, it was like a variation on the Freedom class. Yeah.
So wait a sec. The Freedom class isn't a one nacelle ship.
That was the one nacelle one. So yeah, Jesse's got that one.
So I was because Freeman was like all wondering how they could go to warp in a ship with one nacelle. Yeah. Wouldn't she have like learned that in Starfleet history class or something?
It's a comedy program.
She was just being a goofy.
It's a commentary.
Like, how does that
on
even
something
work like that?
People have said because everyone's like, they always have two nacelles and now they have like one nacelle.
And then
the
Tendi like is like plays the role of like the person who like is
like
super
Data.
More like the super Star Trek fan that as knows like actually they can perform without one nacelle. She says the only sacrifice is the static actuators ..
So, and the classic gag, of course, of cutting her off so that we don't actually the writers didn't have to come up with an actual reason.
Right.
They implied that such a reason existed, which was cool. All right, so Freedom Class class is one. What's another one?
Well, there was the next...
Sovereign class.
Well, that was later, but before there was like a there was another one with one nacelle, and then there was like a Terran class.
Yes,
ship.
It was an ISS California. So it was a California class. But,
oh, ISS California.
Yes, but it was the ISS, the Mirror Universe version of the California class. So that was, I still count that as a different class because it was California class, but Terran California class with all the extra weapons.
Do you think their California has a K?
Maybe, I don't know. And then Dan, of course, you said Sovereign class. That was cool.
Yeah,
big giant Sovereign class, like the old Enterprise E.
That was the E, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Other classes. There's a few more.
Working on it!
There was like, on it. Ones where, like there's a nacelle up top and a nacelle down below.
Yeah, that was to me, it was very brief, but that looked to me like a Constellation class, which is what the Stargazer was.
Stargazer, right.
Right? It looked like, and the Stargazer has what, like four nacelles or something? I don't know. It's crazy. Whatever
it
is.
Right.
It
was like that style, maybe a couple different variations on that.
Yeah.
I think.
And so I'm it's interesting because to my eyes, I swear I could see a Constellation class briefly, but I haven't seen it on Memory Alpha or the other listings. But a couple more that you've missed three more that are out there.
Did it go galaxy for a bit?
It did. Briefly was galaxy class.
Working on it.
Dan just keeps clicking the working on it sound clips.
Working on it. 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 Working on it.
I'm trying to think over here.
Do you just have the two of those working on it? Do you have no other
working on it? Working on it. Working on it.
Working it.
There's no clips from any other Star Trek series ever that say where they say working on it. You don't have
working on it. Working on it. Working on it. Working on it. Working on it.
Are there other? There's probably other working on it somewhere. Right?
I would, yes. I think most Star Trek characters at some point or another have said the words "working on it," or maybe not, but a lot.
We are working on the problem.
See,
it's working.
Huh?
It's not working.
It's not working.
Alana's working on the transporter.
Working on it. Working on it.
Boy, I'm something was working for you.
So actually, there weren't that many other working on it. The closest was...
We are working on the problem.
That's the closest you got. And this one.
Alana's working on the transporter.
Alana's on it.
To clarify, in your database.
In my database,
your database is not all Star Trek sound.
Well, I mean, you were asking... No,
it
I know.
Your curated Star
No, but
Trek
I mean, you were asking me if I had more.
Yes.
And so I was answering your question of no, I do not.
But I was doing two things. I was asking you what you had and asserting that I bet there are people saying working on it somewhere else in Star Trek.
Jinza, when the truth was uncovered.
Maybe that's what we'll do over our when we have a brief break, a hiatus, where the audience will still get episodes, but we'll have a break. We can do some research into the working on it situation and get as many working on it clips as possible so that we can string them all together into a highly obnoxious series of sound clips. I think that'd be great.
Oh, man, that's really sweet.
I know, and it's intended to be.
All right, so we had more?
Two more classes, and I'm happy to let you know what they are.
Just shout them out there, man.
But just last chance. Dan's actually just searching for the answer, I guess.
No, I was just looking if I had them in my notes. I like how the schematics, like you saw the schematics all switch up.
Yeah.
Cool. So the other classes that the Cerritos turned into briefly were the Miranda class, which is like the Reliant in Star Trek II. And the Miranda class is a ship they used a lot in TNG and DS. They kept going back to that class a lot, even though it was older.
Yeah.
But it was the Reliant from Star Trek II style. And then Oberth class. And Oberth class, I think we saw that, was that a few episodes ago or last episode? Recently on Lower Decks, I think we saw an Oberth class. Oberth class, I believe the first time we saw it was in Star Trek III. The USS Grissom was an Oberth class, the science ship that was visiting Genesis. And was
one of those
subsequently,
science-y ships.
Yeah, it was blown up by the Klingons.
Okay, right.
Where the hull is all separate from the rest of it, like all goofy, which is, you know, similar to the Cerritos.
Mm-hmm.
Good. All right, I think that's everything.
Good!
Of course, they did revert to the standard California class. All right, so now let's briefly talk about Vrelga, this new villain. We already talked about her being the sister of these other brothers, and even though she's a new villain, Dan's correct to note that we have a sort of handy-dandy cheat card a la the Durosses, which, as I've noted before, it's a little puzzling that Star Trek decided to have this concept of genetic assholes. The Durosses are genetic assholes. This is more plausible, because this is not people named Duros over 200 years of Klingon history, this is a single family, all raised presumably in the same compound or house.
A pity you discovered my trick.
Relga is, immediately we have this, we know what her deal is because she's similar to her brothers, right? Okay, so that's all fine. What makes her great and actually makes her a good villain is that she's the third of this family, and she also does seem to be more formidable than the other two in a lot of ways, right? Because
no more running, coward!
She's more formidable in the sense that she's got this toy targ.
Yeah, right. And it reminds me of that. Isn't there like some kind of famous dog that has like ratty looking dog where the tongue is like hanging out its mouth and it's got like bulgy eyeballs?
The ugly dog contest. Every year they have that ugly dog contest, and that was a particularly ugly dog.
And I think that targ is supposed to be like that dog or something.
I think that's a good call. I expect you're correct.
Good call, Dan.
I didn't think of that, but now that you've referenced it, the connection is clearly there. Mm-hmm. I like that she was really having fun with this toy targ. While also being very abusive to it. So we get to hate her. We get to see the cute dog do the funny garbly gobs, but we also get to hate her because she's being mean to the dog.
And at first we thought she threw her dog out of anger because Freeman hung up on her to talk to Zoe.
It
turns out it was a ruse. She knew it all along, so she didn't throw her dog out of anger. She threw her dog as part of the act, part of the ruse.
Or both.
Or whatever. But anyway, she didn't... Anyways, it was a premeditated throw, is what I'm trying to say. And so, like, that's even more fucked up. I don't know if that's more fucked up than doing it out of anger, but I don't know. Yeah. They're both fucked up. But I mean, it does seem fucked up to premeditatively be like, I'm going to throw my dog to convince them that I'm lying.
Yeah. Well, and I think just narratively, clearly it puts the audience in a position to be like, man, what a horrible person this Relga is.
Are you an accomplice?
We look forward to her getting her just desserts.
This is exactly what I needed.
But we also learned very swiftly, we learn enough about her to know she's going to be formidable.
You like that word, formidable.
And she's going to be mean and goofy.
Formidable.
And, you know, so it all makes sense. She's got her selfish desires going. And like her brothers, she doesn't care about the high command, which is another interesting thing they share in common, a la the Duras family. We also get to see the first situation that emerges from this. What do they call this? The tachyon energy? What was it that was coming out of it? I forget.
Oh, there was tachyon. Well, first of all,
it was a bunch of stuff. Okay, tachyons is one thing.
So they were talking about the tachyons, and she was saying that they were immune to tachyons or something.
It's just because they have a cloaking device.
She says that tachyons mean nothing to a bird of prey.
Yeah,
or something.
They're well suited for that stuff.
Yeah, tachyons mean nothing to a bird of prey.
I just forget what's coming out of the rift.
Well, they shoot a gluonic beam into the rift.
Yeah,
and there's a soliton wave comes
a
out
soliton
of,
wave.
To,
that's
out of
what
the rift.
That's what I'm thinking of. Thank you, Dan.
Soliton.
And
a Schrodinger ring.
Yeah. Well, there was the whole soliton wave business in TNG.
There was a lot of good maroons and violets and magentas again in this episode, and the rift was all zappy and it was like all awesome looking. Did you notice they had some shaky space hand cam? You know, like in BSG, Battlestar Galactica, where they have that shaky hand cam, but in space.
It's the second time you've mentioned Battlestar Galactica this episode.
I know, but it just so happens that that's also... You know what I'm talking about? How they have, like, shaky hand cam?
No, I know precisely.
But they do it in space
mean.
Where they, like, zoom in on the ship and it's all shaking around.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but it looks cool.
It does look cool.
Yeah.
No, I was very impressed with the visuals of this episode, and particularly the fact that this Rift Nebula space wave things, it was a remix in that it created something new and interesting out of a bunch of other stuff, right? We've seen rifts before. We've seen nebula, like in Star Trek II, the Mutara Nebula. We've seen the shock waves, like in Star Trek VI, when the Klingon moon Praxis blows up, and the Nexus, you know, has a similar vibe. And they, like, layered all that onto one thing, and so the Cerritos is having to fight, like, all the Star Trek things all at once. And it was very visually appealing to look at.
This episode is action-packed.
It was action-packed, and it also had all sorts of stuff that was both interesting and funny. Like, when we are introduced to this idea that this rift is putting out these waves that can cause things to change, first we're told how it works, we're told how it works later, but first we see one of the Klingon captains in Relga's fleet briefly turn into a Discovery-style Klingon, and then the ship turns into a Discovery-style Klingon ship.
Wait, was that what they were talking about, the mindless proto-Klingon?
No. At the beginning of the episode, when he turns into a blue Discovery-style Klingon with no hair and a big long head.
I somehow missed that.
All like beaky.
Well, at one point they turn into Beaky. I don't know if that one turn time they turn into these monstrous proto Klingons.
Well, that's how it ends. That's how they die.
Yeah, I don't remember proto Klingons a thing.
Yeah. That was from the TNG season 7 episode where they de-evolve.
I can't believe I missed the Discovery Klingons. I'll have to watch that again. But
you
then
will have to watch
what
it
they
again.
Were talking about how the
it was a bit controversial online, in fact.
That they showed that?
Yes, because some people were like, are they saying Discovery takes place in a different dimension?
Oh,
and then other people were like, no, they're not just saying that. They're, you know, there's all these different ways to interpret it.
Anyway, yeah, so this it was the Schrodinger
Dan's like fuck online.
Schrodinger possibility field, it remaps matter into other possibilities. Now, they didn't really specify what those possibilities were. As far as we know, it's anything, basically. Yeah. I mean, a Klingon bird of prey can turn into like an old
right, cuz that one dude turned into a cactus.
Well, what was the ship that the bird of prey turned into?
It was an old Klingon barge.
It was a barge
and that like
was
a modeled, galley.
It was modeled off of the barge of the dead that B'Elanna in Voyager, I think, has to hang out on.
B'Elanna's on it.
In that, yes, she's on the Barge of the Dead. And this is both funny, but also fucked up because the ship turns into a barge, and then they all just float off into space dead.
I know. That's
right,
what I'm saying.
All hands lost.
That's like saying anything is possible. Like a ball could turn into a purple or something.
Right, a purple.
A ball could turn into a purple.
A purple could turn into a yellow.
Or your finger could turn into a sock.
Yeah, or you could end up with a whale and a bowl of petunias falling through the atmosphere a la
your mouth could turn into
Douglas Adams.
Speaking of falling through at the
Hitchhiker's
end,
Guide to the Galaxy,
you remember at the end when they were showing Tana and like Westlake fell through some black
yes,
hole? I couldn't figure out what the fuck was going on at first. I thought he got zapped and I had to watch it like two or three times. I was like, oh, there's a hole that opened
because
up
he disappeared. Remember, he ascended. Mm-hmm. Tendi helped him ascend, and he saw the koala.
No, wait, that's not Westlake then. Then that's someone else.
It's somebody. Yeah, remember it was the episode where the guy ascends and sees the koala.
The koala.
And
yeah, right. No, I remember.
And now this is him coming back.
I thought that was Westlake, who was Tana's partner.
No, it wasn't Westlake.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
It was that guy from season 2.
When those girls were sitting around that green thing, was that the thing?
Sex lantern?
Yeah, was that the step from the anaphasic?
It was a sex lantern. Presumably a different one because they sorted out that.
So are we to believe that like 7 women got around and all just like got pleasured by the sex lantern together?
Now, Dan, here's what I'm doing. I've got my arms crossed and I'm leaning back a little bit.
I can see it.
I'd like you to...
Red alert!
I would like you to provide a little bit more detail. What exactly are you imagining that these women are doing?
I don't know what to say.
So, do you think that the women...
Looks like they have a lot of blankets.
Are you implying that the women are getting together having a sleepover party where they're going to masturbate?
I didn't say anything.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
What are you fucking implying?
What do you think I'm implying?
I mean, what do you think the show is implying? We don't need to be yelling at each other. We can, I think, as mature...
I thought they were just telling stories.
Mature adults? Yes, Jesse. He knows the right thing to say.
So reading, poetry, singing songs.
There was something sexual going on at that slumber party.
I don't know.
That's all I'm going
to
say.
I agree it's difficult to escape that conclusion, but... version does that take? It could just be, you know, hanging out, being titillated, right?
But I mean, that sex lantern is supposed to, you know, get inside you and, you know, make you feel all good.
I mean, you
make you feel all good.
I think you mean at least in to some degree metaphorically, but I guess not. It's a ghost, right? It's a ghost that fiddles around
inside you. So it's like you're all getting sexually gratified simultaneously. That's what's happening.
Well, okay. Here's the complicating factor, because as our friend Jesse on Crusher Convo has noted, at least as presented in the TNG episode with Beverly Crusher and her sleeping with her grandmother's sex ghost.
That was weird.
That there was a great deal of manipulation and therefore implied assault involved. We certainly don't get the impression that these officers sitting around the table with their sex lantern... I don't think we're intended to assume that there's going to be any sort of assault here. It's meant to be some sort of certainly consensual, fun thing. But I'm not 100% clear what they're trying to get at. I will admit to having been somewhat titillated by that scene.
Red alert!
Whether that's what the audience was going for. I mean, the
what is the meaning of this?
We're going for that reaction from the audience. I do not know, but I can't think of an alternative one, so I won't feel guilty about it.
Okay. Well, there was also...
Sex ghost candle.
So when things were turning into other things, they had those images of, like, the Vulcan, the Klingon, and the human, we presume. Yeah, and the the green Klingon holding a Christmas tree turned into a Targ with a smaller kind of tree. Then there was a blue Starfleet human holding this star flower thing that turned into a human with a cactus head. And the plant was all melty suddenly. And then the orange Vulcan holding like this thing turns into this like this poofy thing. He turns into a smaller Vulcan with bigger ears.
Like an elf or something.
Was that like some kind of reverse Infinite Spock reference or something?
Well, he had like a mohawk, right? It was like a short Vulcan with a mohawk. Yeah, I don't know. It was amusing and a little bit...
this is an impossible situation.
Esoteric.
Mm-hmm.
It was a riot.
There was also... I can't decide which point I want to go to next.
Okay, well, you know.
You could do it.
When it comes to podcasting, it's a bit... There's a... What's that old phrase? Giddy up in your get along or whatever. What's that?
I don't know.
There's a hitch in your giddy up. Isn't that what it is?
We don't know what you're talking about.
In your get along.
Yeah, it's in your get along.
So you're talking about
move along home.
How the episode looked cool. We were talking about how the episode looked cool. I like at the beginning shot when it was like Shaq sitting in like their turn forward, but it was showing the outside, so you saw him in context with the other decks, and it was just a neat shot. And
That was good Star Trek.
And it began like a fluff episode because it was all talking about how we're like getting repairs and then the crew's just relaxing while they're getting repairs.
Just taking it easy off
and that's,
duty.
And that's like...
The calm before the storm.
And that's like traditionally sort of like a lighthearted, like low stakes episode. But this one was like the highest stakes ever.
Yeah, it was like a Discovery episode.
Yeah, it really was.
That's a good way to put it. They saved the fucking universe.
Mariner was pointing out how like it was awesome that someone decided to put bars on starships. I was thinking about that. Like starships, like, okay, the Enterprise is, would you consider that a military ship? It had, people lived on it. Was it just the crew's family and people that transported?
Well, which Enterprise are you talking about?
Were there people that just lived on the Enterprise just to do science research or something? I'm sure there were, right?
In TOS.
Especially on the D.
In TOS, D's nuts. In TOS, it was more in the vein of a naval vessel where you didn't appear to have families and stuff, but you had plenty of scientists and maybe even civilian people working on there, but not families so much. Mm-hmm. TNG, with the Enterprise D, that's when you firmly and specifically note that, oh, we have families and kids and schools and all sorts of stuff going on. They got movie
this
theaters.
This is exactly what I needed.
An arboretum and 10 forward, you know, all that stuff. Strange New Worlds, the Enterprise has a bar, so we can assume that the Enterprise on TOS always had a bar.
So, which is interesting, because it's like I don't know much about the military, but I would imagine that naval ships don't, generally speaking, have a bar attached to it. So it's kind
of like... Well, Jesse, what would you say? They probably have some sort of, in the galley, maybe?
Oh, well, there's an a bar, but there is a...
But there's not like a... There's an
alcohol ration.
Yeah, but there's not like a room where you go and like a restaurant style lounge area. There's not like a lounge,
like a cafeteria,
like a cafeteria.
No,
it's probably a cafeteria.
Not on a sailing.
There's a mess
ship.
Hall. I'm sure there's a mess. Well,
on a modern ship, there's probably an officer's lounge.
But like 10 forward, for example, is more than a mess hall. It's like a restaurant bar and it's chill. And there's like nice
waiters.
Yeah, so
that's more like a shore base kind of a thing.
And so that's interesting that like they always like compare starships with like water seafaring boats.
Yeah. Yes.
And this is one place where they differ is like, yeah, it kind of makes sense to have like a restaurant thing on a starship.
It's more like a cruise ship.
Yeah. But like not on a fucking naval ship. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Starship is more like a cruise ship.
Mm-hmm.
Korboppel.
Korboppel.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that was awesome.
I am cataloging the Korboppel levels of the isometric flingometer. Korboppel levels.
Korboppel emissions.
Korboppel
emissions.
Korboppel
emissions.
It's like half of our bobbles are corbed.
We could have come up with that one.
Half of our bobbles are corbed.
It was so great.
Korboppels. Korboppels.
I forgot to.
Which is the one that I made up?
Korboppel levels.
Korboppel
emissions. Korboppels.
Which one did I make?
That last one?
Korboppels.
The obviously edited together one?
That's this one.
Half of our bobbles are corbed. Korboppels.
I made that.
Korboppels. Half of our bobbles are corbed.
You look like Korboppels. Real fucking proud of yourself.
I am cataloging the Korboppel levels of the isometric flingometer.
And I'm researching how Korboppel emissions affect sleep.
Corbopple?
Yeah.
Half of all bopples are corbed.
Half of all bopples are corbed.
Yeah, half of all bopples are corbed. I mean,
that was such a ridiculous like exchange.
But genius. Dude.
I know, it was awesome.
It was the
brilliant
greatest.
And
yeah.
So well developed, delivered.
Corbopple
levels.
Another line from there. Actually, I meant to Corbopple look this
Bopple
up.
Levels.
I meant to look this up, but I forgot to. Is a bramble an actual drink?
I was wondering that too. Yeah, if a bramble.
Or is that a nonsense drink or an actual drink? Why don't
I don't
we
know.
Well, let's look it up now.
I like how
bramble.
I like
drink.
How other Boimler's pad doesn't actually have any useful like engineering information. It just has like it just has information about like what drinks he likes and like, you know, ways to be a cooler Boimler. But like at one point Boimler is actually like, this doesn't actually have any like engineering data in it.
Oh, it turns out a bramble is a real cocktail. The bramble is a cocktail created by Dick Bradsell in 1980s London.
Dick Bradsell.
This purple boy has proof that Mariner has hidden my brother.
Best described as a spring cocktail, the bramble brings together dry gin, lemon juice, sugar syrup, creme de mure, and crushed ice.
What's creme de mure?
Bradsell also suggests finishing off the cocktail with some fresh red fruits, such as blackberries or cranberries, and a slice of lemon. I will click the link for creme de mure.
Thank you, sir.
Meanwhile, I want to
Wikipedia.
I want to point out that Malor. Remember that their home planet is Q O N O S.
Yes.
And here's him saying it.
Kronos.
Yes. Hey, wait. Let me play it.
Okay.
Kronos.
Say he pronounces it Kronos.
Yeah. Most of the Klingons pronounce it Kronos.
But it's spelled Q O N O S. There's no R.
Kronos.
I know you always bring this up, but it's just like that's just
I'm just
the way
showing
it is.
More evidence that it's wrong.
Yeah, but I think no, everyone agrees with you. This is just
evidence.
This is a pronunciation thing. You can pronounce things however you want
you
to pronounce
just
them.
You don't just add R's where there's no fucking R's.
Sure you do. There's rhotic languages
it's
and non-rhotic.
It's a glide.
American English is rhotic.
It's a lateral.
British English and New England American English is non-rhotic where you drop the R's, you know?
No!
Herbert, you say Herbert instead of Herbert.
You're messing with me. That's not real.
Anyway, let's see here. Creme de mire. This is just creme liqueur. A cream liqueur is a liqueur that has a great deal of additional sugar added to the point that it has a near syrup consistency.
Okay.
But whoa, what? Really?
It's like a gin drink with a lot of
creme de cacao, creme
sugar.
De menthe.
What? Why?
Creme de mire. Oh, creme de mire is blackberry. It's a blackberry cream.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. Now you're interested, right?
I agree.
So Jesse and I are going to, at our earliest convenience, we're going to find ourselves some brambles. We're going to order up some brambles.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe we'll make one.
We have to find some nice gin.
For the next
show. That's not
totally
show. Disgusting.
Yeah,
you're so handsome
gin.
And cool.
All right.
I think you look very handsome.
You're so handsome and cool.
Dan, do you think I look really handsome?
Leave it to Lynn to point out like explicitly the will they, won't they situation.
Yes, I love that. And it was great. I'm glad they finally got to that point where they made it
when,
a little bit more clear
and
what
when,
was going
when
on.
When Tendi like pulled him back and took his temperature, you could tell his brother was like freaking out.
Yeah.
His pee-pee twitched a little
she
bit.
She was like, I must have been mistaken.
Foul.
Oh!
Foul.
I might be, you know, imagining it, but I got the impression that over the season, they also were kind of positioning very subtly, but nevertheless still positioning Boimler and Talin together. They not only have had them work together a lot and have a good positive working relationship, but I noticed more recently they're usually orienting them so that Talin and Boimler are sitting next to each other and often together commenting on Tendi or Rutherford or Mariner, whatever nonsense is going on.
Tendi and Talin, they were having co-senior science officer clashes, just like I predicted. Yeah. I predicted that because you got to have one in charge, not two, unless you have a committee. You can have one in charge or you can have a committee, but you can't have two people in charge. Doesn't work like that.
All right. This is
well said, sir.
Dan's management tips.
Yeah.
And I concur.
Even three is better than two.
Wholeheartedly.
Even three is better than two.
Yeah. You guys know what you're talking about.
Do you notice that Mariner got... Okay. It was Mariner got mad at Boimler because William sent the Soliton wave. He's like, how could you fucking do that?
Oh, right. And they Boimler, all did. They was like the Boimlers.
And Boimler was like, I didn't do it. It was my other person.
Yeah.
And she was all pissed. But then later, Mach got pissed off at Mariner because Becky Mariner knew where Malor was.
That's right.
And so he was like, Mariner, you know where he is. She's like, no, that's Becky. I don't know where she is. So they all,
totally.
Everyone's falling for that other person didn't do it trick, you know?
Yeah.
Classic.
Classic.
They
classic
Star
trick.
Trek.
Yeah, they were totally Star Trek to death.
They were totally Star Trek. I like how Mariner referred to Malor is a rural Klingon.
I didn't guess that. She's a rural Klingon.
Yeah, she was talking to a Kimolu, who was like one of the whales or dolphins or whatever they are.
Because there's Matt and Kimolu.
She goes, "Hey, Kimolu, Matt, you see a rural Klingon come in through here?"
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Now you're right. Now I remember that. Mm-hmm. Speaking of rural Klingons, we have to take a break.
So, what?
What? We got to take a break.
Whoa, what? Really?
Yes, indeed, really. So we're going to do that. We're going to take a break. And then when we come back,
take a break,
we will conclude our discussion of Star Trek Lower Decks series finale, The New Next Generation. Be right back.
Get us out of here!
Okay, are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
I gotta get ready to push this button. All right, we're back.
Warp me!
Oh, yes. Yes! Yes, feel it. Feel it, yes.
I didn't know
Jesse's making little horse flappy lip horse sounds.
I didn't know that Rutherford had a...
You were saying
Rutherford, yes.
I didn't know Rutherford had a dopamine inhibitor.
Yeah, that was neat.
That was pretty neat.
Yeah, it was neat.
So
like, wouldn't that be cool?
So remember how before I was talking about how Mariner got mad at Boimler because William did something and she got mad at Boimler at it when she shouldn't have, and how Mach got mad at Mariner because of something Becky Mariner did.
Yes, well, yeah, I remember that.
There's like two things happening of the same thing. You know, there's a word for things like that.
Two things happening at the same thing.
Yeah, and then there's another instance of that happening, this time with Ransom, Boimler, and Mariner. Because you know how Freeman made Tendi and Talin co-science officers? Well, Ransom made Boimler and Mariner co-number ones, co-commanders, or whatever you want to call them.
Cobra commanders.
Cobra commanders.
And what's interesting is Freeman did it in the spirit of them working together, but Ransom specifically wanted them to compete with one another over the position.
So that was really great. It was an excellent part of the resolution to the episode.
I like Ransom it's kind of funny that Ransom becomes a captain because he is like your sort of like, you know, like they're making fun of that traditional kind of like, you know, full of himself kind of captain guy who's actually kind of dopey or whatever. Yeah. But then he actually becomes like the captain at the end. Which is kind of interesting.
Part of what makes this episode great is that, again, unsurprisingly, we know how skilled and talented these writers are and how much they care and how familiar they are with all the tropes of the Star Trek franchise. But they were able to give us resolution on so many of these things. We already mentioned the Tendi and Rutherford budding romance. We see that's sort of opening up, right? They've laid the foundation for us to imagine that goes someplace.
Mariner called Boimler handsome and cool.
Yeah. She did. Although, and some people listed
you're so
that,
handsome and cool.
Some people suggested that was implying a Mariner Boimler romance, but I don't see that.
I don't see
they're
that.
Just, they're just
nah.
friends. Right?
Nah.
Nah.
No.
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 No. Our scans are negative.
Some of the other things that other loops they closed were, yes, Ransom, right? He is now elevated to captain. And I'm sad that we won't get to see him, at least not immediately, be captain, because he will be different as captain than he would be as first officer, because by definition they are different roles and you have to act differently.
His lifting actually came was directly helpful for the first time in this episode because he was able to do that punch catching trick with a fucking Klingon. That's pretty hardcore.
And the Klingon was like, "How are you so long?" And he was, what was his line? He was like,
"How are you so long?" That's what you said. "How are you so long?"
Well said. If I said that, it was on accident.
You were more chaotic.
Strong. Yeah.
Because he said high intensity interval training.
Yeah.
But
I was just
to wrap up my point about them closing loops. Captain Ransom, right? That's closing a loop of Ransom's elevation. But importantly, even though it was a little, well, maybe subtle's not the right word, but it was a brief moment, when Mariner and Tendi come to Captain Freeman with this whole, we got this message from an alternate Boimler, or from William Boimler, about this alternate universe, all this terribleness. They're surprised when Captain Freeman immediately is like, I totally believe you, because she also has matured. Just like the Lower Deckers have matured, Captain Freeman, who in season one would have been like, fuck you, I don't believe you, or you're making up some shit, or this is a scam.
She said they were the They were her best officers.
Yeah, and that she could trust them.
We have to take it seriously.
And it wasn't solely that they had to earn her trust, which was part of it, of course. They had to prove that they weren't complete fuck-ups. But she had to be ready herself to provide that trust, to relinquish that, to risk that trust, because that was something that an older version, a previous version of Captain Freeman would not do. Right. And so I thought that was another important resolution.
And then she got
among many in this episode.
Yeah. And then she got rewarded with being able to move up like she's been wanting to.
Yeah. And move up to Starbase 80. As I said in the Starbase 80 episode, that was a really inappropriate position for her to be at. Now,
this is exactly what I needed.
I thought they might put her in charge of Starbase 80, but instead they've put her in charge of the missions to the alternate universe portal. Very similar to the wormhole at Deep Space Nine.
That is good captaining.
It's derivative of that in some sense, but I think it's done in a clever way. And the idea of the lesson that Boimler learned in Fissure Quest, that he learned from Lily Sloan, where he was critical of the idea of exploring different dimensions versus actual geographic space, and Lily Sloan convinced him that actually there is a great deal of interest, or many interesting things you can discover by exploring these different dimensions. And now they can do that. Now they have this dimensional porthole, and it's the exact universe that needs to have it. Is our prime universe that we're so used to, and most of our characters that we have grown to love are in this universe. So,
I'm not joking, Lee.
Just amazing how many plot resolutions, and I'm missing a bunch of them because they had a lot, even for some of the one-off subtle characters, like you said. Remember when that guy came through the portal into Anna's, in the sick bay? That was resolving that loop, because it was like always like, where did that guy go? He went and talked to the koala and the Black Mountain and all that other business. Just super, super impressive, these storylines.
Yeah, man.
Although M'Lore just kind of wandered back into the bridge out of nowhere. We never really, Ransom was hiding him.
Ransom at that point, I guess, let him out.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, oh, here he is. He just kind of wandered back in there. He was like, hey, I'm here now.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed kind of.
And just again, a reminder to the audience that those strange noises you're hearing in the background is Jesse playing on a stylophone Beats.
So the
synthesizer device.
The Cerritos bifurcates into two quantum possibilities, right? So, and I thought it was cool that each ship was controlling the other. That was kind of like an interesting mind. But they
what did Ransom say about what was getting bifurcated? Like, he said.
I just said the Cerritos was bifurcated.
But he had a term, like dimensional realities or something.
I don't know.
Or quantum something.
Or something are stationary. And anyway, I'm sorry. Please continue.
You got these two ships, and one controls the other, and so they had to work. They had to overcome the challenge by working together to get them to come
science
back in.
Science buddies,
and that
besties.
Was and that
besties.
Was
besties.
Science besties.
Science besties.
Friendship.
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 Science besties.
It's always sort of an adventure to be like that. I wonder how many times in a row Dan will play.
But what I was saying,
he looks delighted no matter how many numbers, how many times it plays.
Science besties.
Friendship.
They had to control. I'm going over what I said again because I don't think I've gotten this. Been able to actually get what I'm saying.
Get
out.
Through it.
Well. Help me, Jesse.
Yes.
Help me get through it by doing your part. So the one ship is controlling the other, so they have to work together to bring the ship together. Yeah. And just like Tendi and... So the two ships have to work together, just like Tendi and Talin have to work together. It was like, to get everything back, it was all like layered, man.
And it was also... Yes. They made a point. It was also to give Tendi and Talin their part to play in resolving this... catastrophe,
yes.
Because another thing that this episode did very well is made sure that every single character got a part to play in fixing everything, right? They had an opportunity to contribute their skills to resolving the plot of the episode, resolving the drama.
What class ship was the squat one? There was a squat one.
Squat one.
Probably the Oberth, where it's like it's got the connections on the side and it's got like the engineering hole down below.
I think there was actually two kind of squattish ones. Weren't there?
Maybe. There's also the Constellation class. I just don't know. To which one you are referring?
To which I am referring.
To wit?
To wit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you like me to say something amusing while you... You're just sort of... I see you scanning with your finger. Are you... What are you looking for? Are you looking for a sound effect? What is this?
There was like... Oh, I can't believe... Well, now it's all... Well, now we're just going to sit around and like... This is not going to be worth... The juice is not going to be worth the squeeze.
So you think that by the time the audience gets to hear whatever sound you're about to play...
Yeah.
And having endured minimal entertainment in the intervening time... Do you think it's not going to be worth it?
I don't think it'll be worth...
I know this is a sunk cost fallacy, in this case, it might be funny to just keep waiting until you play this sound. Jesse's got his business going on over there. I'm kind of digging that. It's very space sounding. Welcome to ADD Theater. I hope you all have not taken your medication. It'll be much more enjoyable if you just skip the Adderall today.
Is it this?
I felt stuck out of phase like Geordi in Row Wandering.
Hello.
No, that was last week's episode.
Yeah. Wait, was it this? Like Winger, maybe it was this.
I've hit rock bottom.
No, or was it this?
Stirring stuff, Mr. Bingston. I wish I could stay.
Act 7! The Oberth year.
That's what I was looking for, because yes, you said Oberth.
Yes, you're right.
I was looking
right.
for Oberth.
He referenced Oberth. That's what I was
that
thinking about. It was
way
last week.
Too long to find, and no. was not worth it.
Well, how about this? Audience, please write in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
Not feedback.
Subject line, was it worth it? And let us know, was it worth it? We'll select a winner, like from everybody who.
I'm sorry, Jesse. That's really distracting.
We'll select a winner.
I shall be sorry.
No. It's just that it's going. It's like messing with my brain.
Kind of digging it. It's a little brown notey.
It's just like
bowel shaking.
I think it's just because it's going. It's like fucking my head up.
Jesse's disturbing Dan. All right, getting back on track here. Oh, one important point. I think it's...
That Kayshawn and Miglimu garden together?
No, but that is very cute. This scene, right, towards the end of their, you know, when they're trying to close up the fissure, and that's when we see the ship morphing through all the different classes, right? And partly that's fun just because we get to see a bunch of different classes of ship. That's great. Typical nostalgia stuff. But what Lower Decks does well is it has the nostalgia, but it has a purpose for it too. Often anyway, it has a purpose for it. And here, they're showing all these powerful ships. You got Stargazer class, you got a Miranda class, Galaxy class, Sovereign class, Oberth, like all famous ships that have played an impactful role in Star Trek lore. And what they're doing by having it rotate through all these ships is two things. First, they're positioning the Cerritos to be just as important as all these other ships, right? Just as important as the Enterprise, ED, whatever. So that's point number one. Point number two, and it gets back to what we were saying with Rutherford, because Rutherford is what makes this point more strongly, but it's combined with this visual of the ship just changing. You needed the Cerritos to solve this problem. Other ships were not sufficient to solve the problem.
So that was one thing that I wasn't clear on, because on the one hand, they said the Enterprise is on its en route.
Yes.
First of all, I'm like, what is the Enterprise even going to be able to do in this situation?
Far away. So.
Why? Well, I mean, even if it was close by, what they were saying is that only the Cerritos could take care of the situation anyway. But actually, they were seeming to imply that only Boimler could, because he was connected to William. They did at one point. They said because Boimler is connected.
I know exactly what you're referring to. I'm saying I interpret it differently than you did. I took it as, yes, they were sending the Enterprise because they presumed the Enterprise was better, but that it was too far away. So that in one sense, the Cerritos had to go because they were there. And then in the other sense, they were saying, and by the way, it's because of this other Boimler, like you might as well be the people, because why not?
It says, with the connected Boimlers, you are our only option. That's what they say.
Well, they literally just had already said they were the only option separate from the connected Boimlers thing, right? So it is a little confusing how they
said
phrase it.
What they said that, they said Enterprise is en route, but there's no time.
There's no time.
I'm not done.
I don't know. You look.
I'm not done.
You're looking.
He's not.
You're looking at acting sort of done.
Let him go.
Not done. The two Boimlers are linked in ways we don't yet understand. Call it fate or entanglement, this is your mission. So they're saying, because the Boimlers are linked in ways we don't understand, this is your mission. Also, later they said that because the Boimlers are linked, there are your only hope.
And again, I interpreted it as, maybe the Enterprise and all other ships are so far away because fate is saying you have to solve the thing. That's a dramatic thing. I don't give a shit about that. What I care more about is the direct, is what Rutherford says. Because what Rutherford points out is that the fact that the Cerritos is designed, like all California class ships, the Cerritos is designed to be multi-purpose and multifunctional. It can be reconfigured on the fly easily, and thus it is perfect for this specific mission where they have to be adaptable and, because of the crazy waves.
And so, so the Miranda class, right? You're talking about the Miranda class.
Is what a Reliant was.
But what about the Carrie class or the Charlotte class? Or maybe even the Samantha class.
It took, me a second. This is a Sex in the City joke.
What about those?
Damn, dude.
Dan's a huge fan of Sex in the City. He's seen all the shows.
What about the Charlotte York class? Or the Samantha Jones class?
Yeah.
Or the Carrie Bradshaw class?
Yeah.
Because you already mentioned the Miranda Hobbs class.
Yeah.
You see what I'm doing?
I think everyone sees what you're doing, Dan.
Everybody knows, dude.
Yeah, Tana actually got all sentimental at the end too, which was she all like
hugging Captain Freeman.
Yeah, she was like,
God, I love you.
No, she said that to Shax. She did this.
Yeah, yeah. Really, it was sweet. It was cute. There was a lot that was sweet. It was a good episode. It was a great episode.
Totally.
And it's
I agree.
It's one of those episodes where it's a great episode, but it's sad that the episode being so great. Okay, I know what I'm trying to say.
Okay, what are you trying to say?
What
Patrick?
I'm trying to say is the episode being so great actually makes you lament that the show is over.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's also the type of episode that only was so great because it was the end of the series. In other words, they were allowed to close down all these, you know, close the loop on all these plot lines in such a way that allowed them to be heartfelt and meaningful and tug at the emotions and get your tear ducts flowing. You can do that from time to time here and there in episodes, but you can put all of that into a single episode, a la All Good Things, right? Mm-hmm. Where you really do just a good job of tying together a bunch of long-standing plot threads and character threads. And this episode really, really achieved that.
But
and
did they know that this was going to be the last episode?
When they finished,
they left it open for more stories. And plus, also, Mariner said specifically, this isn't the end of the story. It's just the beginning. So, or it's the beginning.
Well,
so that alone you could interpret as they want to do more.
Of course. But even if they don't do more, first of all, like we said, we know we'll see these characters again in some form or fashion. But even if you weren't to see them, Mariner's speech still allows your imagination to wonder where they're going to go and believe that they're going to go do fun adventures. And you think about it in the sense that when we join the Enterprise D and encounter at Farpoint and Captain Picard is taking command, right? That's the beginning of a lot of these people working together, but not all of them, right? So Captain Picard had a previous relationship with Beverly Crusher. He knew Data, right? And I think he had you know, heard about Geordi, etc. So we see them forming some of their relationships throughout the series, but you know, this is where we're seeing the junior people learn how to be Starfleet officers, which is a very different angle. So now we're going to see a whole different chunk of story. It kind of made me think when watching this, I was like, in Picard season 3, when we catch up with Beverly Crusher, who has been off doing a different type of mission with her son for 20 years, I was thinking about how her son grew up with her, right? Doing humanitarian stuff. He knows nothing of all the adventures we know about Beverly Crusher doing all across all of TNG and the TNG movies, right? So there's a whole life that he's not familiar with other than through maybe some stories she told or looking at some files. But and we're seeing the early days with the Lower Decks people, and now we can imagine there's all this space for what kind of adventures they'll have. And the other loop that was closed was that great line where that great exchange with Ransom, where Boimler's trying to say, well, we can't be first officers because we're still lower deckers. And Ransom's like, no, dudes, you guys, you're like the boss of the lower deckers.
Right.
And it was a perfect way to close the series by saying it justifies the series ending right? We don't want this series to end because we love these characters, but it's justified in it ending because now they're moving on to the next phase, mm-hmm. which is why a lot of people were hoping that the cancellation wasn't real and actually there's going to be a new show called Upper Deckers or something or Middle Deckers. Sadly, that's not the case, but hey, the possibility is open there. They could do it anytime.
You see how Mariner pulled off some like some serious engineering shit to build that quantum dam?
Yeah.
So, which is interesting because she's... It was the other Mariner was the one who was supposed to be all good at engineering. Remember previous episode, that Mariner was good at engineering and was all against adventure. But this Mariner is also good at engineering. So Mariner is just naturally good at engineering, whether she knows it in her particular dimension or not. She's good at that stuff.
And she's good at like using the fist to pound the touchscreen button.
Yeah.
And and Talin was I was talking about Talin being insecure during the episode where they got stranded on the planet, because Talin was talking about like Tendi, you can communicate and I apparently cannot. And I was claiming she was insecure. And I have more evidence that she was, because at the end Tendi goes, you said evidence. I think it's at the end.
He's not going to push the button.
No, because I'm saying something.
Okay.
What are you saying?
I sit through what? Every like 5 minutes of you talking, you can't sit through a minute of me talking.
No, I'm just used to, like, every time I say evidence, you push the evidence button. Mm-hmm. But you don't push the evidence button when you say evidence.
God, fucking doing something.
Okay, I got you. No worries.
So saying, Tendi says, today's chaos has driven us apart, but that's when we need to be the most in sync. And then Talin says, relinquish control, trust each other, before we had to prove ourselves. And so Talin is saying we had to prove ourselves before, which implies that Talin felt the need to prove herself, which implies that she was insecure, which is something that Vulcans, I didn't know, got down with insecurity too much. So, I'm just saying, down with insecurity. But I'm saying, like, the Vulcans, Talin was actually feeling insecure this whole time. And I guess Talin's more of an emotional Klingon. I don't know.
You mean Vulcan?
Vulcan, yeah.
Or whatever. Same shit.
I like how that started out very, very progressive. And at the end, it's just like, yeah, Klingons, Vulcans.
I like that Ollie did this.
Whatever.
Ollie did some kind of Street Fighter lightning zap thing.
I love that we got to see Ollie and all these other characters. They really made a point. I mean, it is Lower Decks, and the producers did not forget that the show was meant to highlight, yes, the four, eventually five lead characters that we followed around, but all of these characters, right? Good, bad, ugly, whatever, didn't matter.
Ugly.
It's again, it all wraps up into the sweetness of the episode and the respect that it shows the characters and how important the role they play, even though they're quirky. The important role they play in Starfleet.
From time to time in the past, I have taken two lines, like, I don't know if you remember, I did this a few episodes with the Lower Decks, the same one where they went down and got stranded at the planet, and Boimler and Rutherford were cleaning up that the console, and they were going like, ah! Yeah. Remember? And you remember me playing back-to-back the ah when they were
playing? Yes, and it was different volume.
And different volumes, and I was saying, and I've done this, I think there was a Voyage episode where I did something different, similar, I think it might have been the Tattoo episode where...
called Tattoo.
Where Chakotay was all said one thing, and then he repeated that later, and I was noting that the pitch was different, and I was suggesting that they sped it up, and you were suggesting, Patrick, that they actually just recorded the same thing twice.
Of us will ever know the answer.
Wait, here's I think this is the Voyager one.
Talk to me.
See, that was two. Yeah. That was supposed to represent the same part in the episode, but they played it once at the beginning and once later. You'd think they'd play the same sound, right? Because he's saying the same thing, but they're different. So earlier in the episode, in that scene,
let me see you.
And then later, they're playing that scene again, except the second time it sounds like this. Fuck. God damn it.
I mean, that was really smooth and professional.
Oh my God. Why is my life so terrible sometimes? Okay. It goes,
let me see you.
And then later on, that's supposed to be the same scene.
Let me see you.
See?
You have nothing to fear from me.
You have nothing to fear from me.
Talk to me.
And now, so the question is did they speed it up or did they just record it twice? Now, this relates to this episode.
Okay, I was going to say, the question, you presented your question. My question is how does this relate to this episode?
Okay.
I believe you that it does. I'm just waiting on tenterhooks.
Evidence.
So, remember at the end of last episode when Boimler goes, holy f***, we're all going to die!
Yeah.
And this episode, he does that again.
Holy f- we're all gonna die!
See, that was from this episode. They didn't do the whole thing, but they played it again. Yeah, now, the question is, was it the same sound file, or did they record it twice?
Now, what is your opinion?
My opinion is it's the same one. I'm going to play them.
Holy whoops, we're shit, all sorry. Gonna die. I didn't mean to.
Okay, so I'm going to play them both on top of each other real quick.
Holy we're all going to die!
So I would say, I think in this instance, they didn't record it again. Yeah. They simply copied directly what he said last time, and they just copy and pasted it instead of recording it twice. I just thought it was interesting because in Tattoo, it seemed like they either sped it up or they recorded it twice.
I agree.
And then it was weird that in the episode where they got stranded the planet when they were cleaning the console and they left the scene screaming and came back screaming, there were different volumes. It's just something to notice.
Totally, you know? Dog.
That's what we're here for, Dan. We're here to notice those
something
things
to notice
that are worth noticing. And
it's got something to notice.
The things we don't notice, our audience can write in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com and tell us to notice them, or find us on social media at It's Got Star
Wait,
Trek.
Wait, are we ending the show?
Or they can
no,
just
but
completely
it was, no, we're almost ending the show, but not quite.
Close,
I just figured, you know what, that was a good opportunity to give out the
we're
email.
We're getting to
and
be
the,
like an hour and a half.
And the email and the social media at It's Got Star Trek.
That was pretty smooth.
Blueski.
Yeah. Yep, Blueski.
Blueski. Blueski. Join Grayson and the rest of your friends.
Trusky.
On Blue Sky.
Billups couldn't even finish those shield updates on time. Just like last episode, or two episodes ago, when everything was breaking because there were half-assed fixes he made just happened to all fall apart and almost destroy the ship. And he couldn't get the shield up. I thought Billups was pretty competent, but he hasn't been showing his skill in these past few episodes.
He's kind of a bozo.
Yeah.
He comes from like a magic planet or something.
That's true.
But that Klingon is hot. Do you remember that line?
Relga?
No, don't you remember? No, it's not me saying the Klingon is not.
They have salty and sweets!
I'm surprised you don't have the line. One of the cetacean ops people said that Klingon is hot, and then the other one said, I noticed.
I
think Matt said, I noticed, and
is that when Boimler's
Kilimanjaro.
Like,
yeah, I wouldn't have that sound effect because they don't have that. You have to read that. It's closed caption.
Oh, no, that's right. I was thinking about how funny it would be if you had the sound effect
of them
because
talking.
It's them chittering like dolphins with subtitles.
You know, I'm a little disappointed that I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very disappointed in you.
Well, I did write down the part where it says, Matt says, getting sprayed down, sign me up. And then Kamolu is like, save the jokes for when we're not in mortal peril, Matt. And he's like, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was that. I should have recorded their chittering.
You know what? There's nothing better than a chittering dolphin. that's podcast gold.
I should have recorded their chittering.
Podcast gold. Any other fun stuff? Because we do need to start closing things down.
Wrap
here. Any lists, Dan? Any duties or no duties?
There was no duty or no duties.
Any poop em ups or shit em pants?
Shit em pants.
I guess. I mean, here's this is the part where there was Zoe, that fish lizard person, and like the human looking dude all talking about the thing.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, the fish lizard person. I believe that was from. I believe we saw them in either. I think Star Trek IV, where they were like four legged quadruped horse people with Trade Federation faces. Because they do kind of. If you look at the one from the movie, they do kind of look like they were the inspiration for the Trade Federation in Star Wars prequels. You know. With the racist,
the Nemoidians.
Yeah, the Nemoidians. Yeah, that's right.
So this is the human dude talking and the fish lizard talking. Notice that the human dude sounds like the human dude sounds like he's the alien and the fish lizard person sounds normal.
Yeah. Long-range scans have confirmed your fears, Captain Freeman.
Soliton resonance is overloading the dimensional rift.
Yeah, totally.
I totally agree. He did sound weird.
One more time.
Long-range scans have confirmed your fears, Captain Freeman.
Soliton resonance is overloading the dimensional rift.
He just sounds so goofy.
The whole thing
sounded goofy to me. I thought it was really funny. Like the one alien looked like really hilarious.
Yeah.
And the whole way it was presented, everybody just looked silly.
Lizard?
Yeah.
I got the impression that guy was doing a delivery a la TOS Admirals, sort of that 1960s mid-Atlantic fake invented accent that they used in a lot of TV.
Yeah.
Golly, golly, golly gee, eh?
Golly.
Golly, golly gee. Why say you? That one, like, say you, why, hey, say why. You say you.
Merry Christmas, you old savings alone.
Golly.
Is that what you mean?
Golly,
Merry Christmas.
Don't listen to him, girl. He didn't mean it.
Go fuck yourself, you savings alone.
She goes, he didn't mean it. Look.
Don't listen to him, girl. He didn't mean it.
He didn't mean it. And then Rutherford goes like,
yes, I did.
Yes, I did.
Yes,
cute.
I did.
It was
yes,
very cute.
I did. And she goes,
don't listen to him, girl. He didn't mean it.
He didn't mean it. Yes, I did.
All right. Okay.
Don't be so weak.
Any other business to attend to for this episode? Any other thoughts, Jesse? Dan?
No.
All right.
Only if I get to be Long John.
So, okay. Great. That concludes our discussion completely of Lower Decks.
That wasn't your call, Jack.
However, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the line, perhaps in the not too distant future, we maybe do a fun bonus episode.
That wasn't your call, Jack.
Lower Decks or Wrap Him Ups or something. I don't know. We'll do something because I like talking about these characters and it'd be fun to.
I like talking about it too.
Yeah.
Maybe do some sound effects contest or something because that was fun too when we did
that. That was weird.
This whole day is weird. All hands. Race for weird.
All right, so yes, bittersweet, sad that Lower Decks is ending, but a wonderful episode to end it, to conclude our coverage.
Wonderful.
And it's a reminder.
It's wonderful.
A reminder that we have covered.
Rutherford!
Did you notice Meredith was also, was in that one too? She said the first Rutherford.
Great. A reminder that we have covered each and every episode of Lower Decks.
Hi, Captain.
From the beginning, and you can, of course, scroll through our feed. But if you want to see where our coverage is, go to our website, www.itsgotstartrek.com.
This purple boy has proof that Mariner has hidden my brother.
And on that website, you can go to the menu and you can actually click by series or topic. And so you can click on Star Trek Lower Decks, and that will filter the episodes just by our Lower Decks
discussion. Why?
That works for all the shows. And for those folks
how the hell are we supposed to do this if our heads are turning into cactuses?
For those folks who've only listened to us for our Lower Decks coverage, check out some of the other episodes.
Just do it.
We bounce around the entire Star Trek universe.
All over.
Every series.
Every single one.
So
buttons.
If you want to stick in the animated realm, TAS.
Hey, that's fine with me.
I love the TAS episodes. They're my favorite podcast to do. They tend to be the lowest number of downloads. People just don't watch. I think a lot of people just don't watch.
Hey,
TAS.
You won't catch me complaining about a TAS episode.
That's one of the other series that we have completed.
Yeah, see, we've done all of the TAS.
All of them. We've done all of them. How many people can say that?
We've done all of Picard.
I'm enjoying Dan's hype man thing. I'm guessing he ran out of sound effects. Like extra.
Get us out of here!
Full impulse!
What? Why?
Tense, brother.
I did not run out of sound effects.
But I know.
I was just trying something new.
But yeah, we already did social media. We did website.
God, I love you.
If you'd like to send us a voicemail, itsgotstartrek.com/record. Leave us a review.
Leave us a review, you'll get a haiku. Wait, here's the theme song. Leave us a review, you'll get a haiku. Yeah. Leave us a review, we'll get the haiku.
Yeah.
Leave us a review, you'll get the haiku.
Yeah.
All right, it was catchy, although just to the audience, Dan's musical constructions are generally more sophisticated than that, but that's a pretty good one.
Leave us a review, you'll get the haiku. I thought that was rhythmically fascinating. Rhythmically fascinating. Hey, Norm!
Full impulse! Full impulse!
Are you doing Harry Carey? A la Will Ferrell's Harry Carey?
What was it?
What are you literally? I don't do Harry
he's
Carey.
He's like, what of the... I think, what do you think the moon's made of? I think it's made of spare ribs. If I were the moon, I'd eat myself. I'd be delicious.
Right. I will ram that bridge.
Well, more of that if you keep listening to our show. Again, next week, we will be doing part one of our coverage of Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. Part two the following week, and then more Star Trek after that. So until then... we wish you all the best.
Don't want to lose my edge.
And we will talk to you next
week.
Carey commit Harry Carey? Is that how he died?
Yes, he split open his bowels. It was hilarious.
We're doing Star Trek 5 next week.
Yes.
All right.
Five.
Why were you looking at me like that? You freaked me out. All right.
You know.
Star Trek 5. All right. Yes. All right. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Holy s***. Wait, did we just save the universe?
Universe.
Hey, you get the universe.
The kids
love that universe.
Universe wine. The universe wine.
The universe wine.
The universe wine.
baby, if you've ever wondered, wondered whatever became of me. I'm living on the air in Cincinnati, Cincinnati WKRP. Got kinda tired of packing and unpacking, town to town, up and down the dial. Maybe you and me were never meant to be, just maybe think of me once in a while. Up that highway, leaving you behind, hardest thing I ever had to do. Broke my heart in two, but baby, pay no mind, the price for finding me was losing you. Memories help me hide my lonesome feeling, far away from you and feeling low. It's getting late, my friend, my love, I miss you so. Good care of you, I've gotta go.
My phone!